This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. It should be a slow holiday week, but we actually have a lot of business news to cover, so let's do that. The Boston-based fantasy sports site DraftKings is going public. The company says it's going to merge with an international gambling technology firm. It's a deal that's expected to close early next year, and then they'll take the new entity public under the DraftKings name. Also, on Friday, Waltham-based Care.com announced that it was being sold to a New York firm for about $500 million. Joining us on the line to make sense of all of it is John Chesto, business reporter for the Boston Globe. John, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
So lots of big news here, John. What's the headline?
Well, the big news is DraftKings is finally figured out a way to get more cash to help its growth. And that involves going public and merging with a European company called SB Tech that'll bring more technology to DraftKings' platform.
So this is about money to grow at the speed that they think they're going to need to, John?
Yeah, that's right. You know, DraftKings wants to be the dominant fantasy sports provider. And, of course, now that a number of states are legalizing sports betting, DraftKings also wants to be the dominant purveyor of sports bets. That's going to take a lot of money. Originally, DraftKings tried to merge with its chief rival, FanDuel, and the federal government did not take kindly to that. It was basically discouraged on antitrust grounds. So now they have to go it alone, and this is how DraftKings is going to go it alone. Given that they employ hundreds of people here in Boston at their headquarters, I think it's a good sign that they've been able to pull this deal together.
Well, that does kind of beg the question. They opened a big office in the Back Bay earlier this year. This is a cash infusion, as you referred to it. Lot more jobs. Is this good for Boston?
Yeah, I think it is. Sometimes when companies get acquired, it's usually bad for the community where the company is being acquired. But sometimes, in this case, the management will remain the same. They're going to use the money that they're getting from this new investment as they go public to grow. So I think it is good for Boston. I think Boston has really been doing well in the consumer technology space. We're not San Francisco or Silicon Valley, but we're definitely holding our own. And it's great to have a few flagship companies in the midst. DraftKings growing fast. Wayfair also comes to mind, another fast-growing company.
Should DraftKings' choice here tell us something about what they think the future of legalized gambling is, both in Massachusetts and, nationally?
Well, I think they know that it's going to be more widely accepted as the states figure this out. You saw New Hampshire sped up when it's going to have its legalized sports betting. It's going to be next week. Rhode Island has been at it for a while now. They were one of the first states, and I think we're going to see more states do this. Massachusetts, the big question has been, when does Massachusetts take this on? There are a number of bills before the legislature. They are moving at a deliberate pace. They're not going to rush into it. They do not expect a huge amount of taxes to be gained from this, so they don't want to rush it. But I think we'll see a bill get signed into law in 2020 legalizing sports betting in Massachusetts.
So, John, let's talk about Care.com for a minute. You said in reference to DraftKings, this is one of those cases where an acquisition essentially is not going to be bad. Care.com is being bought for about $500 million by a New York company. What is that going to mean for Waltham, where they're based?
Yeah, there's going to be a little more control out of New York now, which is not necessarily great for expansion in Waltham. They have just under 200 employees in Waltham, and I don't expect much growth in the future. I could be wrong. I've used care.com for our daughter finding a caregiver in the past, and I like it, but I understand the limitations, the screening process is, I think many people thought it was there was a better screening process for various aspects of the website than there was.
They took a hit on that, right?
Yeah, the Wall Street Journal story. They've been taking a hit on it for a while. There wasn't until a Wall Street Journal story in March really outlined some of the problems that the stock, it really tanked the stock. Care.com has put new controls in place. The stock's improved somewhat, I think partly because investors did expect some sort of acquisition might be in the offing. So the new CEO is going to come from the acquiring company, and so we're going to see more decisions made out of the headquarters office in New York rather than from Waltham.
John, Sheila Marcello, the founder, as I understand it, will no longer be in charge of the company. So that's another business woman in Boston who now won't be a lead businesswoman in Boston. Does that send ripples across, the diversity questions in the community?
You know, I think she was heralded as one of the top female executives in the area, and there aren't that many, unfortunately, female CEOs in Boston, particularly that were running publicly traded companies. Of course, this is no longer going to be publicly traded once it gets acquired by IAC. I don't know if it's going to how much of an impact it's going to have. You could look at there's a group called the Massachusetts Competitive Partnership.
Hey, John, I'm sorry. I thought we were going to do a shorter answer that I got to move us on, but I do appreciate you joining us. John Chesto is a business reporter for the Boston Globe. Thanks so much.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
We often hear the holidays are a time of joy and cheer. It is not all cookies and smiles. The days are shorter, they're darker, they're colder. That can make a lot of us feel sad. Doctors say many people, some estimates say 10 million Americans, actually suffer from a more acute form of depression when the season changes, called seasonal affective disorder. Dr. Sanford Auerbach is an associate professor of neurology at Boston University School of Medicine. He stopped by Studio 3 recently to tell us how to recognize its symptoms.
Well, there's some people who particularly have a change in mood that it seems to be related to the seasons. The most common one that most people think about is the one that particularly affects people, usually starting late fall, early winter, as the days get shorter and colder, and usually associated with some type of depression, whether it's overt depression, just a change in mood, lack of energy, increased sleep need, change in appetite. It can take a form of a lot of different physical symptoms, some which people are more keen to than others or tuned into more than others.
So is it actually a type of depression, or is it something that looks like depression?
Very good question. Very good question, which is actually, it's not very obvious. And in a lot of ways, it is a depression. And oftentimes people wonder, is depression just a single thing, or is it a lot of different types of depression? And it's also interesting in that people who become depressed, there's not just the mood change that people usually latch onto, but there are these other physical changes that occur with people, changes in their sleep patterns, changes in their appetite, in their lack of energy, or and so forth, that all are part of depression that people oftentimes don't think about.
And those are also present in seasonal affective
and
disorder.
And those are all components of seasonal affective disorder. Not everybody always has all of those features all at the same time. We even sometimes see people who don't feel that their mood is changed that much, but have a lot of these other physical symptoms. Should we call it depression? Should we call it something else? To me, oftentimes it's not as much as important as what we call it, is just recognizing this pattern or constellation of symptoms that people may get that seems to be related to a certain time of the year.
So that's the marker of seasonal affective disorder, is whether or not a set of symptoms like the ones you've just stated seem to correspond with changes in the season. Am I understanding you correctly?
Yes. And it's complicated because a lot of people have latched on to the fact that it has to do with the changes in our light cycles. But there are a lot of other things that go on at the same time, and it's oftentimes in the individual person, it's hard to tease them apart. Is it really that the change in life cycles that they're suffering from, or is it the fact that the weather has changed, it's gloomy, it's cold, it's snowing, and so forth, and overcast? Or is it because there are a lot of holidays this time of year and it brings up certain factors, certain stress factors for some people more than others? So there are a lot of things going on all at the same time. The one sort of common factor that people have latched on to oftentimes is this notion of the shortening days.
Is that often a trigger?
It seems that way for certainly a large number of people. That seems to be the major trigger, is this shortening of the days.
And what is going on in the brain?
Well, it's there are a lot of things going on in the brain, and certainly there are changes in the neurochemistry of the brain that go on. We already know, even from studying sleep, that a lot of the neurochemistry of the brain is tightly linked to our biological rhythms, our circadian rhythms, which in turn are affected by light. Those are the very powerful pathways that go from the light to the part of the back of the eye, not necessarily the part of the back of the eye that's related to our seeing, the rods and cones, and then passages from there back to the deeper parts of the brain, and in turn involved with the regulation of a lot of other neurochemical substances within the substrate of our brain. The details of this interaction are difficult to tease apart, in part because a lot of the, like serotonin, for instance, or some of the other neurotransmitters, they're implicated not just in our mood, but also they're implicated in our sleep cycling. And, you know, are people affected, their sleep affect their mood, or mood affect their sleep? It becomes a very difficult intermixed problem.
I imagine there's some continuum between, let's say, what I experience, which is it makes me really grumpy that it's dark after I get out of work, all the way to I have seasonal affective disorder. How does one know if their experience of the darkness of the winter season elevates itself to the level of seasonal affective disorder?
Well, that's where the question comes up. How do people realize that they're grumpy or really depressed? You know, at what point does it interfere with their ability to enjoy themselves? At what point does it interfere with their ability to get things done on a day-to-day basis? At what point does it interfere with their interpersonal relationships? That's when it takes on the notion of this disorder. I think that it's fairly common that people develop some of these symptoms to a mild degree. Not as many people, you know, does it get to the point where it's a clinical problem?
For how many people does it become a clinical problem? What percentage of the population?
It's hard to know. My speculation is that it's at least 10 to 20% of the population that this would affect. And again, the problem is it's this whole gradation that you had mentioned, from you a little bit grumpy to, you know, maybe sleeping a little extra or a change in appetite, to those people where it interferes with their day-to-day function. And again, some of the people who may have ongoing problems that just become more manifest at certain times of the year.
I suppose I should ask you, can the opposite happen? Could one experience these symptoms when the days get longer and the sun is out more and the weather is warmer?
Sure. The thing that we latch onto, because it's a nice, simple solution, is the mood change that occurs as the days get shorter. But by definition, these seasonal affective disorders can occur at any season. And there are some who may have particular problems in the spring and summer months.
What are the treatment options, Dr. Auerbach?
Well, very often, particularly for this seasonal affective depression that we've been talking about, certainly on the one level, things that help with depression in general are helpful. Things like exercise and keeping up interpersonal relationships and talking with people and getting out and socializing are all very helpful. Sometimes other additional therapy is helpful. Whatever is helpful for the depression in general can be helpful here, as well as the medications that are typically used. The one thing that seems to be a little bit different, at least is triggered by this notion about the sleep and the days and the shortening days, is to use light therapy. So one of the things that's particularly thought of as being helpful for these seasonal affective depressions would be light therapy.
And that's exposing yourself to a light box during a particular period of time or time of day. Is that correct?
Short of taking a trip down to the Bahamas or whatever.
That's a lot more than light therapy. That's life therapy, I think.
But yes, you typically, you know, the typical sort of thing is to have people have some sort of light box that they sit in front of, oftentimes for 20 to 30 minutes. It's sufficient for many people. And usually the most effective for most people tends to be in the early morning as well.
Are there resources that you recommend or are available to people who have more questions about seasonal affective disorder and maybe whether or not it's affecting them?
Yeah, you know, I think that the first thing to do would be, if there's a concern about the person, by the part of the people, is to talk to their physician.
Even just your family practice or general?
Family practice. You have to start somewhere. And, you know, depression, the problem, in answer to your question before, the depression by itself is such a very common problem in our society. And I think that more and more primary care physicians are much more tuned in to looking for problems, if not dealing with them directly with the patient, and referring them to the appropriate resources for the patient to deal with. Because even if it's not seasonal that they're dealing with, they're still dealing with problems that oftentimes can be helped or managed and even treated fairly effectively.
Is there anything else that we need to learn about seasonal affective disorder that we don't know yet?
Well, I think that there's a lot to be learned. You know, what is this particular signature of this disorder that distinguishes it from other forms of depression? Knowing more details about the treatment, you know, exactly how much light is needed, exactly what timing is best. Is it really the same for all people, or different people, based on their profile, need to be used different amounts of light at different times of the year? When should people start treating and using the light? There are a lot of things that need to be known.
That was Dr. Sanford Auerbach, Associate Professor of Neurology at Boston University School of Medicine. There's more ahead. I'm Tiziana Dearing. This is Radio Boston.